Carol, also, could you get the dates on the call? Sometimes you forget that, too.
Oh, yeah, I do have that written down. I'm sorry I forgot that. Okay. We had a call about 3 weeks ago that was, most people thought, a pretty good call, and I neglected to record it. And seeing how I have had these issues this week, Jim and I decided just to use that same outline, but of course we'll be having our ad lib as we typically do, so it won't be totally the same.
Right. Jim, I heard you mention McDonald's. What was that about?
That's what I asked about. And then all of a sudden, why?
Are you talking to me about McDonald's?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I got up a little late this morning and hadn't had time to fix breakfast. And I just had time because where I moved to, McDonald's is about 4 blocks away. So I drove down there real fast and grabbed some junk food. I drove back, and I get two texts on my way back from somebody that saw me go through McDonald's, give me a bad time. One guy says, "It makes your hair fall out." And I says, "Too late."
How did he text you?
Well, I had my cell phone with me.
But I mean, it must have been somebody you know then, right?
Oh, yeah. It was two people. Well, Michael Denny, you know, John Simon.
Oh, okay. Saw me. That's funny.
And then the other person saw me, told me that I had bad habits. Well, duh.
Oh, my God. I love it. Well,
for those of you that don't know Jim, for those of you that don't know Jim, he doesn't have much hair to start with.
Morning, Carol. This is Gary.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you, Gary?
I'm good. I'm good, Carol. I'm good, Jim. I love the story about McDonald's. I'm going to stop going there, but I think it's too late for me too.
Yeah. Well, here's what happened with my hairline. It was designed to be for a 5'9" man. I'm 6 foot, so I grew right through it.
That's what my sister says to me. She said I was only supposed to be 5'10", not 6 feet. I grew through the hairline.
Oh, that's funny.
I've never heard that. That is so funny.
I'm on my second call now. The first one was just everything that Jefferson's ever said.
What was that? I don't recognize
that's great.
It.
Was that the Dr. Kira call?
Oh, that's right.
That was on at 12.
I do my hair. You know, and it's like, and I'm
Ivy. Well, guys, we are getting.
Good morning, Carol and Jim and everybody. This
good morning.
Is Rob.
Oh, hi, Rob. How are you?
Oh, it's great to be on. I missed the last one. I couldn't make it at all, so I was looking forward to listening to the recording because I heard it was going to be so good, but I guess it didn't get recorded. So you're going to go over?
No, yes, it's pretty much we're going to use the same outline as we did then. So, and it is just about the top of the hour, so I'm going to put everybody in Q&A and bring back Judy and Jim. Hang on a second, folks. Okay. Judy. There's Judy. And where is Jim? I saw your phone number here. Oh, good morning, Jim Jenkins. Okay, we should have Judy and Jim back on the call.
I'm here.
So Judy,
I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so it is the top of the hour. That worked out pretty well. So hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, April 13th, 2019. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We're not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. And should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we had a call about 3 weeks ago, which I neglected to record. And seeing how I have had such terrible computer issues this week, Jim and I thought the easiest thing to do would just go back and use that outline again. So for those of you who were with us 3 weeks ago, it's going to be a little bit of a rerun. But for those of you who were not, you get to hear it all over again. You get to hear it the first time. So Judy will be helping me out today, obviously, and my partner Jim will add his bits of wisdom a little bit later. I recently read an article called A Matter of Security, which I found very interesting. While the author spoke mostly about personal security, I really liked his preface to the article, so I would like to share that with you today. Quote, for myself, like many of you, having financial wealth will be something of a new concept. We have seen wealth in movie stars, sports heroes, and wealthy elite alike, but have never experienced this wealth personally. If you are like me, you say to yourself, I would never sell my soul or trade my soul for a single dollar, if that is what wealthy means. To many wealthy people in the public eye, wealth equates power, notoriety, and influence. The money becomes secondary to these things that they work so hard to achieve. Their status and image must now be maintained through greed and indifference, not through love and compassion. But for those who are reading this publication, your wealth is based on a humanitarian perspective where ego has no place. There will be those who wish to take away what you have so long hoped to possess for their own greed and power. Therefore, you will need to change the way you currently live and think to protect your newfound wealth so you can help people through your foundations and charity. End quote. So this is where we come in. The common law contract trust that we provide will protect your assets from those who wish to take it away from you. There have been some questions lately about one needs a trust at all in this whole RV business. From a practical, thoughtful standpoint, you do need a trust to protect your assets. From a banking perspective, from what I have learned, you must have a trust or other entity if you receive more than $1 billion. So the question becomes, what kind of trust do you need? So, Judy, would you like to get started?
I sure would, Carol and Jim. I think we've all heard about many different kinds of trusts, the revocable, irrevocable, grantor, non-grantor, statutory law, contract law, common law, and the bank skeleton trust. What's the difference between them, and is it important?
Well, it is important to know the differences, so let's review those terms. Revocable means that someone, a judge for instance, could say, revoke that trust and pay the person in suing it. Irrevocable means that no one, not even the judge, can tell you that. The assets are the property of the trust, not yours personally. Grantor means you have given or gifted assets into a trust. Non-grantor, in the context we use it, means you have irrevocably exchanged your assets into the trust. Statutory law means it gets its power and privilege typically from state legislatures. It can be changed as lawmakers see fit. Common law is based on the law of contracts and is guaranteed by Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution. Skeleton trusts, as I understand them, are statutory, revocable, grantor trust. The real downside to these is that the bank will more than likely become your partner, and that's obviously not a good way to go.
Okay. I understand that the trusts that you prepare are common law trusts. Some people think common law is no longer valid in the United States. What's the difference, Carol, between trusts and legal entities based on common law and ones based on statutory law?
Well, common law is alive and well in the U.S. and always has been. As I understand it, this global currency reset is about more than the money. If, as we've learned, Nacera and Justera are announced soon afterward, they will once again flourish under common law. As currency exchangers, we should not be worrying about setting up statutory law entities. We will be under the restored republic common law after Jacera's announcement. I found the following information on Intel Dinar Chronicles. Statutory law consists of millions of laws. They change every year and are so numerous and complicated that they require well-paid lawyers to keep up with them. They have created a whole industry of lawyers that parasite off society because of it. Such laws are generally designed to benefit the few at the expense of many, lawyers, the politicians, the big corporations, and the cabal's favorite interests. Legal entities set up under statutory law are subject to those millions of laws and require expensive and complicated legal expertise to defend them. Common law, by contrast, has been around for millions of years. And will continue to be around for millions of years. It rarely changes. It's basically don't lie, don't steal, don't violate the rights of others. It is the closest thing to natural law or universal law that is active in human affairs. It is still the underlying authority and is now returning in force. Trusts and legal instruments that are created under common law have far greater freedoms. They are subject only to the common law and are thus sovereign and immune from ever-changing statutory laws. They can go on generation after generation, well into the golden age, and flourish because they're based on what is timeless. And that's the end of the Dinar Chronicles quote. The common law trust upon which ours is based has been adjudicated by the Ninth Circuit in the United States, Ninth Circuit Court in U.S. versus Dahlstrom, 1983, in which the government's own expert witness, Carl K. Krogh, testified that the trust organization created by the defendants were valid legal entities. Indicator information is licensed to use this form and method perfected by the defendants of the above-cited case. Also, on occasion, the courts have called common law trusts or UBOs unincorporated business organizations. Business organizations. It's kind of early for me today. Not enough coffee. They've called them contractual companies. An explanation of their function can be found in Smith v. Anderson, Chancery Division 247 from 1880. The Smith decision establishes the validity and viability of these contractual companies under the English common law jurisdiction beginning in 1880. The Smith decision has never been reversed, nor has its importance been nullified to the passing of negating statutes in the United Kingdom or any other common law jurisdiction anywhere in the world. And by the way, this Ninth Circuit Court went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was validated by three of the five justices by the Supreme Court of the United States.
Wow, what a great explanation, Carol. So talk to us about how do we get started.
Well, the common law trusts are actually contracts in trust format. Since one cannot contract with him or herself, we use a third party to facilitate it. That person is the creator. Once the creator has completed his or her two tasks, he or she is released from all future responsibility, duties, authorities, or liabilities regarding the trust organization. So again, the creator is somebody other than yourself. It could be anybody. You can choose an adult child, your brother-in-law, your coworker, your neighbor, but they need to be geographically close to you, as you both need to sign several pages in front of a notary public.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, who should I name to be the creator? Any suggestions other than what you just mentioned?
No, I mean, typically people choose a very good friend. A lot of people, a lot of people in this, in our community, more or less, know each other. And they, you know, you'll tell somebody about my trust, and somebody else will tell somebody else. And often people just get together. You can be the trustee, you can be the creator for Joe, and Joe can be the creator for you. People do that frequently. So, yeah, good friends. Something like that is usually a typical choice.
Okay. I don't necessarily want any of these, quote, friends or people to know about my currency. What should I tell them?
Well, I agree. Keeping your business to yourself is important. So I suggest asking if they would help you out in some estate planning, which is the truth. Explain that the trust you are contemplating uses the disinterested third party to create or initiate the trust. And again, that he or she will have no future responsibility, duties, authority, or liability regarding the trust after signing a few pages. And the creator's final duty is to name a first trustee. He or she can name anyone as first trustee. But considering that you were smart enough to buy this currency and smart enough to put into a trust, who do you think they will choose as the most likely candidate for first trustee? That would be yourself.
Exactly. Me?
Yeah, there you go.
So do you need to know how much currency I wish to put into the trust?
No, and that is one of the reasons we put blank lines before your listed currency.
Okay. Will the creator have any access to my trust or my trust bank account?
Absolutely not.
Carol, what if I decide to gift some currency?
Well, that's another reason we put blank lines before your listed currency. Let's say when you create the trust, you had 3 million dinar, and then you decide, and you write it in on your trust, you're investing 3 million dinar. At that point, you can't take it out because you said you have 3 million. So if you decide to give somebody 50,000, you can't go back and change it. So that's why we leave blank lines in there to begin with.
So essentially then, you go back after you've exchanged, then you go back and fill in those blanks with how much currency you have.
That is my plan. That is my plan, yes.
Okay. So what if I buy more after I purchase my trust?
Well, the trustee, you, merely notes the purchase in a minute. You will never add to what is initially listed on Schedule A. As I just mentioned, you will never change Schedule A. Sample minutes are included with your trust and are also available on our members-only website.
Okay, great. So, Carol, what are the certificates for?
One of the creator's duties is to temporarily take title to the assets, in this case your currency, and exchange it into the trust. The certificates that he or she signs over to you are evidence of that exchange. The certificates represent your right to a share of any distribution by the trust and becomes null and void upon your death. So it's not probatable. It has no value. It just becomes null and void. We provide two additional blank certificates for the benefit of your successor trustees who most likely will make them out to yourself. Do not sign them.
Okay.
It's up to you to sign them.
Right. Okay, so Carol, why do we need to keep minutes?
Well, minutes provide a history of your actions, which is especially useful to future generations of successor trustees. We supply a few blank minute pages for you. You can handwrite your minutes, which cannot be altered like a computer file. So you choose to type them and insert a copy of the handwritten notes behind them.
Okay. I had a friend recently tell me that the trust isn't valid because it doesn't name any beneficiaries. What's that all about?
A typical grantor trust in which you give or grant your asset to the trust has beneficiaries to whom the asset goes at your death and the trust terminates. The contract trust that we use does not terminate when you do. You died, the trust did not. That's why we have successor trustees to take over the management of the trust upon your death.
Ah, okay. Oh, gosh. Okay, that's good. What are the tax implications of the RV, as far as you know?
Well, we've been hearing for years that the RV will not be a taxable event. But, you know, nobody knows that for sure. I do think it's prudent to prepare, and it's been suggested to put maybe 35 to 40% into a separate account for future taxes. You know, if it's taxed a year later, you're ready. If you don't, then you get a big bonus. So it's a win-win either way. Win-win.
I totally agree, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. I think that's just a great way to be prudent. So if it's not taxed and I put all my money in the trust, will I be taxed when I take it out?
Again, you know, I'm not a CPA or tax planner. This is just my opinion on how we may be able to take advantage of this one-time break, tax break. I think most of us have issues that we need to address post-RV, whether it be outstanding debt, a new car, helping out friends. You know, we don't want to pay taxes if we don't have to. So with the exchange, how about this scenario? Mr. Banker, I now have X million dollars. I would like you to put $100,000 into my personal account. Here is my account number, wiring instructions, or open a new account at that bank. I would like to take $7,500 cash with me when I leave today, as well as debit credit cards attached to my personal account. I will need these wires to be sent, and here is a list of cashier's checks that I need. I will need a pass-through account for X number of dollars. I would like to put the balance into an account at your bank for ABC Trust, and here is my paperwork. And the abstract and EIN should be all that you need. I mean, this is obviously pretty simplified, but you get the idea.
I've also
heard recently the best thing to do is make sure you have a relationship manager and they can take care of all that for you so you can plan it so it will not be a taxable event.
Okay,
also,
great.
And I just heard this recently. I know many of the people on this call have Zim, which is primarily going to be used for humanitarian efforts. So whatever you donate to give away, you are going to get a tax credit for. So I wouldn't be too concerned about paying taxes. But that's just me. Okay. And I don't know, to be fact, I've heard it many times over the years. If you plan to put money into an existing account, you must zero it out first. You cannot mix old money, USD, with new money, which is USN. And as I said, I don't know this to be fact, but I've heard it many, many times over the years. Just something to be aware of.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Why would you want to mix fiat money with real money?
Exactly. Oh, wow. So I love all this information. You've got a wealth of information. Why don't I just take it all in my own name if it's not going to be taxed?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, from a banking perspective, you must have a trust or other entity if you're to receive more than $1 million. On the practical side, having assets in your own name can be reckless. Plus, it can wreak havoc on your estate plan when you die. Trusts are used to create estate planning in anonymity. Most folks have a will. Upon their death, their will gets probated. That means a judge determines the validity of the person's will. And here's the frustrating part. If anybody disagrees with anything in your will, that person can sue your estate. Oh, it gets even better. Did you know that once your will is probated, it becomes a public document? That means anyone and everyone can read your will. A trust works differently. If I have an irrevocable common law contract trust holding property, the second I die, the management of the trust transfers to the successor trustee. No mess, no fuss. No mess, no fuss. Best of all, because the trust is a private document, nobody can see behind the curtain. As your net worth increases, privacy becomes more and more important. And you know, I see all these programs on TV, these people have just won the lottery, and you know, they got their names all over everything. Oh, I just won $6 million, and I'm buying this house here in Palisades Park. Come on, folks. You know, protect yourself. Right. The first axiom in prudent estate planning is to own nothing in your own name, but to control everything.
I love it. Sounds excellent. So, Carol, how do I get money from the trust?
Well, as trustee, you are entitled to a salary. And while this may be taxable to you, I think it's still a good idea. You can take as much or as little as you determine you need. If you decide initially you want $5,000 a month and that isn't enough for you, give yourself a raise. If you find out I don't need that much money because I don't have any car payments, I don't have mortgages, I don't have anything, you can take less. You are the one that determines the amount and the frequency. You are also entitled to a share of a distribution, much like a stock dividend, if you, the trustee, decides to make one. Again, that is taxable income. Here's a couple better ways. So let the trust pay for your business expenses. Suppose you're thinking about buying property in Europe. Well, why not make it a working vacation? Talk to realtors, pick up business cards, brochures, etc. I'm sure, and you know, I'm sure you also meet a lot of business contacts on the golf course, tennis court, marina, etc. Maybe the trust could contribute to the cost of those memberships. While I wouldn't try to write off the cost of everything, there's certainly a good way to pay for these expenses. You can also borrow money for big-ticket items like real estate and new cars. You must make payments, though, even if just a nominal amount for interest. And again, you know, our tax laws may be changing, so all I can tell you about is what the way things are now. Another method is to have your trust create and fund additional trust to purchase that new house or fancy car. That way the new house owns the asset from day one, it is not a taxable event, and you don't have to make payments. People have talked to me about subtrusts, and other companies apparently are selling a master trust and then subtrust. This is, in a sense, a subtrust because the first one, or mother load trust, as we call it, creates it, but they are all standalone trusts, and they're not dependent upon each other.
Oh, wow. So, boy, that's so interesting. So, do I need more than one trust? And I think I already know the answer, but can I put other assets into the same trust as my currency?
We do not recommend commingling assets in what we call your mother-in-law trust. This is the first trust. We'll hold the bulk of your money. It should not be exposed in any way. And while the mother load should be sufficient now, you will surely want more as your business and property acquisitions grow, as I just mentioned.
Okay. I'd like to ask a question, if you don't mind. I'm sure many of the folks on this call are involved in what they're calling the prosperity programs, and I am as well. Once that happens, which we're told is going to happen at the same time as the RV, can I put that in my mother load, or should I get a separate trust for it?
I would not commingle at all. I could put it in a separate trust.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. My trust is domiciled in Wyoming. Do I need to keep that address?
Well, in order to maintain the state income tax-free status you have by domiciling there or in any of the other tax-free states, yes, that address must be maintained. The $125 or so for the cost of the mailbox is inexpensive insurance compared to the tax savings you will realize. Use the trust correctly. Have all the trust business mailed to that address. It can be forwarded to you later. Jim has suggested send a certified letter to the trust further proving the domicile is in that state. So this time, You know, we've got a few other things to say, but how about anybody have any Q&As? I know Jesse, you mentioned you had a question earlier. And I have one on one of my email. While we're waiting for anybody to call in, I will read this email. Can you explain pass-through accounts in regard to the trust? I understand the concept, but will that affect taxes in any way? I've heard the initial exchange will be tax-free, but if you transfer funds into any account X, afterwards it will become a taxable event. It doesn't make sense to me, but maybe you could offer insight on that. So we've talked about additional trusts. Many people are waiting until, obviously, until the RV and exchange occurs, at which time then we'll create another trust to buy the house, buy the car, whatever. Some people have already purchased their secondary trust or the trust for the house or whatever. But personally, and this is, again, just me, I don't think we're going to have time to open more than one trust account. So at the exchange, you can say, as I mentioned earlier, I want this money and I want this money, and you can send these wires off to me. I want to have pass-through accounts or however much money you determine to fund those trusts that you've already purchased. That's what I how I feel about a pass-through account. When Mother Lode Trust creates a secondary trust, it is not a taxable event. The first time, it's not a taxable event. Okay. How exactly do I set up account pass-through accounts? I think we just have to mention that at your exchange. I need pass-through accounts for X million dollars, and they should be able to handle it for you. Nobody has any questions? My goodness. Nobody's there today. My goodness.
Well, that's because you do such a good job, Carol.
You better be bored of listening to me. So I'll just keep talking. most of us listen to or hear many. Oh, there's a couple calls right there. Oh, more. Okay. Area code 435. Is it you, Aurelia?
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Katie. How are you this morning?
Yeah. This is really, I've just been pushing buttons trying to remember how to get in to ask, so thank you.
Oh, yeah, star 6, raise your hand. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, it was a star 6, yeah, to raise my hand. Okay, good. Hey, this has been really helpful. It's always fun to go back and help me refresh my mind on some important issues. I just really recently, when you talking about purchasing a car or whatever, and that should be put into a trust as well, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just realized I ended up getting one in December, and I didn't even think about a trust because I've been working on real estate stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so you said something. I'm typing up notes here, and I missed what you said about creating a trust for your vehicle. So I put down, I don't think this is right about making no payments. I didn't quite understand.
If you borrow money from the trust to buy a house or a car, then you have to make payments back to the trust.
Okay.
If, on the other hand, you create a secondary trust, you let the mother lode trust fund the secondary trust, you don't have to pay it back. But if you borrow the money, you do have to pay it back.
Well, because of the situation at hand and a urgent trip we took, I just borrowed it from the bank, and I didn't even the trust didn't even enter my mind about doing it, and I wouldn't have had time anyway to do that.
Yeah.
So well, because there's no money in my trust yet anyway.
I would suggest after the RV and you have some money, you pay off your car, and then you're gonna put it into a trust when it's paid off. They won't let you, in most states, they won't let you put a finance car into a trust anyway. So I think you're fine.
Now say that last part again.
Carol.
In most states, they will not let you put a financed car into a trust anyway.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh.
So I think you're good.
But that was my plan, is to pay it off anyway and then get a trust to cover it, right?
Perfect. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Now, I have another question. I'm typing here and putting red question marks where I need to ask you something. Okay, you were talking about gifting. Is that important that we put in our trust everyone we've gifted?
No, I don't think so.
How much?
I don't think so.
Okay, I missed something when you're talking about the gifting area, because I have my own, you know, list of those that I've gifted, so I will know who to get a checklist to when they go to do their exchange. But I missed something on your gifting information.
Oh, what I mentioned was Judy asked me if I needed to know how much she was putting into her trust. And I said, no, it's the reason we leave it blank to begin with. There's a blank line in front of dinar, blank line in front of Vietnamese don.
Oh, right, right.
And that's because, let's say you create the trust, and then and you said, I've got 3 million dinar, period, okay? And then 6 months later, you give somebody 50,000 dinar. You cannot go back and change Schedule A. You cannot change the original corpus of the trust. So if you leave it blank,
I'm not following you on that. I'm sorry. I'm not connecting with your message there. So, okay, you say $3 million, say, in dinar or something. It's in your trust. And then what did you say about gifting someone from that?
All right, so let's say when you form the trust, you wrote down $3 million, 3 million dinar.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So that becomes the original, what they call, corpus of the trust, and you cannot touch that.
Okay.
So you can't turn around later and give somebody $50,000 dinar from that $3 million because it belongs to the trust, and it does not belong to you.
Okay.
You can give them money afterwards, but if you, for instance, leave it blank, as I've suggested, and then when it's time for you to exchange, you know exactly how much you have to exchange. That's when you're going to fill that amount in.
Okay, I imagine there's some notes.
We can talk about it later, okay?
Yeah, we can work on that later. Go to someone else. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. And I got to meet Jim yesterday. That was fun.
Well, good. Yeah. All right, hang on. Let's see. Wireless caller, area code 602. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Carol. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Just to continue on that last question, that ties in perfectly. I left the figures blank on my trust documents as to how much Zim and dinar that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I purchased some other dinar or other Zim, I should say, after my initial date of the trust, April 9th, 2018. And I didn't write a minute for that, but I have a mental note to include that into the blank space. Is that okay to do, or should I go back and figure out exactly what I had when I formed the trust and then put minutes in for the additional currency that I bought?
You have to go back in and put minutes in for the additional currency that you bought, because the corpus of the trust is as of the day the trust was created.
Okay.
So if you started off with $3 million and then you bought $2 million 6 months later, they're not in there unless you put them in there, but they're not part of Schedule A.
Gotcha. Okay, so I just have to do a minute for those.
Yep.
Okay, that was my question. I can ask you other questions later, but that was the big part.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Carol.
Jesse.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. I have a question. I went and talked to a CPA. And I was just trying to ask them some questions about trust, and then all of a sudden they just started saying things to me like, oh, you know, what you're trying to do, because I was talking about asset protection, and they were saying they don't know anything about that, and then all of a sudden they kind of accused me of trying to do something illegal or something or whatever, and I said, well, all I was doing was just asking questions, trying to find out if that, you know, I said about a trust, like how much taxes do you get or have to pay when the money comes out, and, you know, and different things like that. And they just, all these people seem to be negative when you're talking about trust. you know, that aren't, let's say, living trusts. You know, they don't know anything else about that.
Exactly.
That is the biggest problem. They don't know anything about them.
They don't want to learn about it either.
That's right. Well,
it's been my experience.
Yeah, and come a law time, they're going to have to learn. And I think it's something that Jim is going to address a little bit later. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about the article I sent out yesterday, and we'll go into that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Is that all, Jesse?
I guess something else, more or less, like how to change the address from the one Wyoming address to the other one. There's supposed to be a form, but I can ask you for that later, I guess.
Well, actually, it's on the internet at irs.gov, and it's for just Google form 8822B.
8822B.
B for business. So what you're doing is changing the location of the business, not just the address, but the location.
Right.
And you just
build it. Okay. And something else. This CPA told me that if I have a business outside of the state, and I call there, as soon as I call there, then that's considered a taxable event that the business, then I have to pay taxes on that. Well, this trust isn't a business.
Yes,
it is.
It's
a trust.
It's a business entity, yes. Yeah.
Right. But I'm not doing any business. It's just
that's true.
Yeah. So the
You're
thing
right.
is, yeah, so basically, I mean, you know, see, I know this California, they're trying to figure out any way they can get money is all they're trying to figure out.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, they squandered so much of it.
I know I might move out myself.
But with making a call there, mm-hmm. makes it.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. It doesn't even make sense.
I know, but that's if I had a business. But this isn't a business. This is a trust, and the trust can be domiciled wherever you want it to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, I've just been meeting lawyers. Don't know nothing. They get defensive when I ask them questions. CPAs get defensive. You know, like you know. Everything they're talking about is ways for California to know your business, you know, statutory. When I say non-statutory, they look at me like, what? What are you talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you try to speak with any wealth managers now, they're going to ask you how much money you have. Well, I don't have any yet, but I'm expecting some. Where are you expecting it from? Oh,
exactly.
I have some foreign currency. You're going to hear a click on the other end of the phone.
Right.
Or they look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah. And of course, post-RV, they're going to be all over you, but that's beside the point.
But
that's
see, the thing, I came to the conclusion I'm not going to use anybody, no wealth manager, no broker, no nothing, because I've read too many books and seen too many videos. They are the ones, once they come between you and your money, they're trying to figure out how they can get it, make your money their money. And I don't need that because I'm just going to put it in some bank and collect regular interest, the best interest I can get, and then I'll pay taxes on that. And that will be a lot because I'll have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. That's very smart.
In other words, investing is called gambling, in my words.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah. And they're talking about this whole exchange is going to reboot the stock market, and I'm thinking, why? We have all this money. Why would you continue to gamble it, you know?
There's no reason to put it in the stock market either, no?
Mm. For sure. That's for sure.
It's like going to Vegas.
Anything else, Jesse?
No, that's it for me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Well, good morning, Manny. How are you doing today? Manny? Are you on mute?
Hello?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that was on mute. Yeah, thanks. Regarding the last question regarding the tax, the address and everything. Now, when I set up I have three trusts, but each one that I set up, the IRS is informed when it was set up, my trust, with the original address that I still have. I don't have to do anything, right? That was already initially sent. I don't have to send a special form for that when I initially sent.
That's only if
right?
changing. It's only if you're changing address. Yeah. We inform the IRS of your address to get your EIN number. But if you're changing
correct.
It from the mailbox in Cheyenne to the one in Evanston, you have to do another an 8822B.
Correct. Yeah. So it's initially set up when the trust is set up with that address. If it's changed, the only time you got to send the form is when that happens. Correct?
That's correct. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good morning, Danny. How are you today?
Just perfectly. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for this call. Could you just talk a little bit about the pass-through account? Is that an adjective, or is that the proper name, or is that a figurative account for transferring the exchange into an account and then titled in the trust? Could you explain it a little clearer, please?
It's more like a holding account, okay? So you don't have a name for it yet. You don't have a use for it yet, but you know you've got three or four other trusts that you want that you've already set up. You've already set up. And this is my opinion. I don't think you're going to have time at the initial exchange to open more than one account.
Okay, so it's an account that's like a holding account. It's an adjective.
Yes.
It describes
yeah.
a function, which is
yes.
to say, you know, you're going to be leaving it there because you're going to be moving it.
Right, because you're trying to eliminate the taxable event. So you've already exchanged. And it's just a holding account to you could open the proper account for it.
I see. Thank you very much.
Okay?
Yes, that's excellent. Thank you. I have clarified it. Thank you.
All right. Good morning, Jerry. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. This is Jerry from Iowa. First Saturday I haven't had to work since January.
Well, there you go.
Welcome.
So anyway, what I recall from that January conference call, you was recommending a change in mailboxes from Wyoming to another place. Would you tell me where I need to contact another place? And I think you recommended informing the Wyoming mailbox company 3 or 4 months ahead of time for renewal that you want to discontinue them?
Well, for years we've been recommending people set up their trust with the box shop in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Yes, that's where I have mine now.
And that's all well and good if you only have one trust. They do have, they charge more if you have more than one trust. So one trust is about $125. I had all these numbers here somewhere for two. For a business account, I think it's $165. And for five trusts would be a corporate account, $192. So my partner Jim has made some phone calls. We found a place in Evanston, Wyoming, that will that'll allow you five trusts per box at $125.
Okay.
And we've also found a place in Vancouver, Washington, that will allow you five trusts for $125. So before your term, we do suggest before your term in Cheyenne is up, you just call them and let them know you're canceling.
All right.
And you know, it's none of their business why. I mean, she called me. She was very irate with me. Why are you taking my business away? Because you're not being very fair. That's why. I passed on her rate. You know, you get better rates elsewhere.
Do you have a phone number for this Evanston, Wyoming?
Why don't you drop me? I don't have it right in front of me, and I've had many computer issues, so I don't really mess with my screen right now. So why don't you drop me an email later, and I'll send you the address or the telephone number, okay?
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Good to hear from you. Okay. Next caller. Area code 928.
Hey, Mark? This is Christine, and the area code is my new area code if I get the move. But a couple questions. I don't want anyone to see my original trust because each of the companies I will set up, I don't want them to see where the money comes through. So is that a pass-through account so they don't see the original trust, or do I need to set up some company in between to shelter the original trust?
Okay, we call the first one the Mother Lode Trust. So let's assume that you're going to have, let's call it the business trust, just for lack of a better term, okay? The Mother Lode Trust is to fund the business trust with a lot of money. And then the business trust is going to fund those additional trusts, whether it be for houses or for cars or for anything else. The trust in the middle is what's going to fund the other ones. Does that make sense?
Yes. So when this goes, that would be one of the additional trusts that I would have you guys set up, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Because you can see I wouldn't want all the bookkeepers to know about the original trust.
And that's a really good idea. I'm doing basically the same thing.
All right. And what is that little note on the NDA stating that I agree upon review of my team?
Well, it has been suggested by a number of gurus or advisors that you, after you exchange, you employ trust managers and you get a relationship manager and you're going to have attorneys and this, that, and the other. But you still only have a 3-day right of rescission. I mean, I've got a little packet ready to take in, and I have said on the I will sign whatever documents are provided, given that I have the right to review with my legal team and within the allotted 3 days or something to that effect.
Okay. And I have a note here just saying how I adore your team, because listening to some other people by force, you know, it sounds like you're married to them and they make it so complicated, you know. I'm sure you have heard them. And the same person, and I have to bring this up because I'm sure other people have heard this when he said it. He said, with the trust we have, the common law trust, because we have an EIN number, it is no longer, it is violated, and now it is under the rules of statutory laws.
Yeah, I've heard. I've also heard if you have it notarized, it's no longer common law.
Right.
It
and
is,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is the world in which we live. You cannot open a bank account without an EIN number.
Or without a driver's license.
Or without a driver's license or without a social. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I mean, years and years ago, oh, my God, 20-some years ago, my husband and I met somebody who was able to open trust accounts at some Bank of America, some small town in California, without any such ID, without your driver's license, without your social, and without an EIN. So, you know, we've happily paid $100 to open an account, and I'm sure thousands of other people did as well. 6 months later, all those accounts were closed for noncompliance. And especially today, you know, we've got the KYC, Know Your Client. Nobody's going to open any kind of account for you without those numbers. The trust is a common law instrument itself. The fact that we use some statutory, how do I put this, some statutory
vehicles,
ancillary statutory items or whatever, does not make the trust statutory.
Okay. It sounds good. Just like this is a voluntary, but you better pay them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's good. Thank you. I look forward to getting all these things set up when we go.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's very soon. All right, thanks, Christine. Okay. Jenna, or is that Dan?
Hello?
Hi, this is Carol.
Hi, thank you for your call. So what the lady just said about she didn't want anybody to see the master account, could you elaborate on that? Because I wouldn't want anybody to see that. I guess, do you open a business account from that one, like a business trust? Would that be the next step?
Yeah, well, yeah. You're going to open a secondary trust, and actually, we have an outline, and we send out with our little hello, and it explains different trusts and where they sit. But so you've got your mother-in-law trust, and underneath that one, you're going to fund what I just said is a business account, business trust, which is going to fund the other trust. So this way, your mother-in-law account is sitting there all by itself. Nobody knows it's there. Nobody can touch it. But you're going to be working this business account.
Okay, very good. And let's see, something else. After this goes, will we each have a personal trust consultant that we can call direct that just works with us personally, that knows, you know, what we're doing? Like, are we going to work with different people each time we call for different trusts, or one personal person?
Well, I think you had two different questions there. As far as you're going to be working, you should be working with a trust management company after this
okay.
happens.
Okay.
And they are going to be, you know, it has nothing to do with us at all. We create trust.
Okay.
We're not trust management. We create them.
Oh, okay.
Trust management is more on the wealth management side, put it that way.
Oh,
as far
okay.
as,
that was
as far
one of my biggest questions. Okay.
As far as we are concerned, you know, Jim and I are probably both going to retire in about 6 months, but we will have other
yeah.
people working for us. The trust
so
will go on. Yeah.
Trust management could open up the secondary trust.
No.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that's where my questions lie.
Okay, and Jim is going to address that as well. We just talked about that earlier this week. He's going to address that as well. So.
Okay, very good. And last question, we had spoke of this before, but when we go to our appointment, you said don't take the whole folder because it would confuse them. We are supposed to take certain pages of the trust. Okay.
In all the years that we have been doing trust, all that has been necessary to open a bank account is the abstract of trust and the EIN letter.
Okay.
I suggest that initially that's all you give them. However, if they ask to see the whole trust, say, yeah, I have it here in my briefcase.
Okay, that's what I was going to do.
You know, our premise has always been the trust is a private document between you and whoever else is in it. The bank does not have to see the trust. But bankers being bankers, and this being the event that it is, they may very well ask to see it, but I would not offer it unless they ask.
Right. Okay. Okay, and you said that your counterpart is going to address those other things. Would that be today or another day?
Yeah, just at the end, just in a few minutes,
today.
Actually.
Oh, very
yeah.
nice, very nice. Okay, thank you so much, Lynn.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Roseanne, are you there?
Hello, Carol.
Hi. Yep.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a...
Can you speak up a little bit, please? Can you speak up, please?
Okay.
We can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Not very well.
Can you hear me?
That's much better. Thank you.
That's a lot better. Okay. I have a set up like a trust organizational chart, and I'm a little bit, I don't know, kind of confused with, I set it up as the mother lode first, the non-interest-bearing account, irrevocable. Is it irrevocable or revocable if I don't have a trust set up?
Well, the trust itself is either revocable or irrevocable. The bank account, revocable or irrevocable, has nothing to do with the designation of the bank account, but the bank has to know whether the trust is revocable or not. But if you have a mother lode trust, that possibly, and that is, if you got it from us, it's irrevocable. And when you do open a bank account for it, it should be non-interest bearing. And years ago, we suggested to people, well, just go ahead and get your bank account open, you'll be ready. However, thousands of dollars have been lost by clients due to bank fees, you know, keeping accounts open that they've never used. So now we're just suggesting just wait till you do your exchange and open an account then. So, yeah, I think you're sort of mixing apples and oranges, talking bank accounts and or trusts.
Okay, so do I open it up as an escrow? Because I heard another call, it was talking about an escrow account. So do we place it in there until we go get the trust and then fund it?
Okay, all right. If you do not have a trust yet.
Right.
And you go to your exchange, from what I understand, the banks will be offering what they call skeleton trusts.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, they are revocable, revocable grantor trusts. The biggest issue I see with that is the bank becomes your partner.
Yeah, I don't want that.
No. I mean, even if you can, you know, find an inexpensive if you can't afford a trust from us now, if you can find an inexpensive revocable trust with which to start, that might be the way to go. But why don't you just give me a call at some other time? Maybe we can work something out, okay?
Okay. And then my last question was the pass-through account. So say, for instance, the mother load is in HSBC, so my pass-through account, would that be a different bank or can it be the same bank?
Oh, it can be the same bank. It's just a different account. It will be the same bank, actually, if it's pass-through. You know.
So that will be the same bank?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I have vehicles, but, see, my family doesn't. They don't understand this. They don't know. So I wanted to purchase vehicles and place each vehicle in each trust. But I was thinking about setting up a leasing company.
That would be the
way
to go.
Can I do that?
Yep, that would be the way to go. Let the leasing company own the car.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kara.
Yeah, let the leasing company own the cars.
That the cathedral. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'll
like
your call
give me a call back later, and we can work on some stuff. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh huh.
Summer, Alvalda.
Hello. How are you doing, Carol?
Doing well. How are you doing today?
I am fine, thank you. I just thank you for taking the time to do this presentation. I have a few questions. One,
sure.
First of all, the pass-through account. I want to set up more than one account because I trust account. I have one already which you guys have done for me. But I do want to set up a second one because I don't know if this is the best way. I have two children, and I just want to set up two things for them so that they can actually start working within the trust, and then they would be the successor trustees. Is it a good idea? I'm sorry.
Well, I wouldn't even bother with a pass-through account. I would just wait till after the exchange and then set up a brand new trust.
Okay.
And what I would also suggest is you be the initial trustee, okay?
Uh-huh.
And let's say your daughter is going to be the second trustee. She cannot do anything without you, right?
Okay.
Because trustees, you both have to agree. But when you feel that she's able to manage this trust well enough on her own, then you resign, and it's totally her trust.
Okay. All right. So that's what I wanted. Yeah. Okay. So I don't need a pass-through account because I was wondering whether it's best to put the money in a pass-through account and then put it in the trust later on. Okay. So will that answer my question? Thank you for that. My next question is, I've had my trust for a few years, and I've been purchasing more currency to go into the trust, but I have not updated the minutes.
Shame on you.
Well, yes. Yeah, that's true. Yes, I'm not very happy that I didn't do that. But can I know
just go back through? Yeah, just go back and write an end of the year minute for each of those years and saying the trustee purchased additional currency on behalf of the trust.
Okay.
And no other business was, you know, that's not a big deal.
Okay, so that was what I wanted to know. And then the last thing, I heard Jim mention something that he had sent out the mail yesterday, and I was wondering, does that go to the your email, the email of people who are members, or where does that go?
I'm not sure. That I have computer issues, Jim? Okay. I've had computer issues. Did you send it to anybody besides me?
I'm sorry, I missed part of the question because I was trying to set up the blog for this Basel III thing. What was the question?
The article that you were going to talk about that you said you sent out. Did you?
No, I did not send it out because we decided to put it on our blog. Well, I decided to put it on the block. Well, I'm installing it as we speak.
Okay.
And I think on indicator information.com, on the top you see it says blog. It'll be the last article, and it should be up in about 4 or 5 minutes. I'm actually installing it right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay. And I also must thank you so much, Jim. I must also confess that I did not go in and set up my account for the website. And you had sent me something, and I think I tried one time, and I met up on a little bit of issue, and then I just didn't do it. But I really do want to go in because I'm hearing that you have many good things, bits of information on the site, and I would love to be able to see it. How should I proceed?
Just send me an email, and I'll send you the invitation code, and Jim will get it set up for you.
Okay, great. All right. I will do. Thank you so much. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you. You're welcome. Bye. We're Leah. You have another question.
Oh, hi, Carol, again. You had a couple of guests talk about a pastor account. I have not heard of that. And spell it for me. And what is
it? Well, it's interesting that you mention that because, you know, I mentioned it very, very briefly. Somebody, I know there was a call earlier this morning from somebody else, and I know a lot of those people are on this call. Perhaps she mentioned pastor accounts because I rarely even talk about them. A pastor, see, specifically your case, you have additional trusts. You have more than one trust right now. None of them have any money in it, right? So whichever one you decide is your motherlode trust, that's where you're going to exchange all the money.
Right.
But you, and let's, I think you've got three other trusts. So let's say you're going to put a total, you want to put a total of $10 million into those three other trusts. So at your exchange, you're going to say, I would like to set up a pass-through account and fund it with $10 million.
Spell that. I'm not understanding what you're saying. A pastor or pass through or what?
Pass through.
P-A-S-S-T-H-R-O-U-G-H?
Yes. It's like a holding account. It's just like a holding account.
Oh, a holding. Okay.
So you're going to put that money, so it's the way you're going to fund those other trusts that are already created. If the trusts have not been created yet, nobody needs that. But for trusts that are already created, that's how you're going to fund them and still keep it not a taxable event.
Right, okay. That would apply to my situation because from the mother load, I will put some monies into, like, the business trust that will fund the other trusts.
Correct. Uh-huh.
Got it. And then I had another question here from what somebody had asked about a question. Oh, maybe I got it. Well, go ahead. I think I understand. Oh, no, here it is. Someone talked about when you go to your appointment, I missed. There was two things you said to take in, and one was the EIN letter, and what was the other item?
For all the years that we've been doing trusts, all that has been necessary to open a bank account is the abstract of trust and the EIN letter. It is my belief that's all you should need at your exchange. However, if the banker says, well, where's your trust? You could say, just a moment, Mr. Banker, I have it here in my briefcase.
Right.
But I would not offer it unless they ask for it. It's none of their business.
Right. I heard the EIN number, but letter, but then I didn't hear the abstract of trust. That's a letter.
Yes, it comes with this, and it should be in the back of your binder, the last two pages.
Right, I will find that. Thank you so much. That's helpful. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and we got one more, and then we're going to go to Jim in a few minutes. Hang on. So, hey, Rob, how are you doing today?
Hello, Carol?
Yes, how are you doing, Rob?
Yeah, great. This is kind of basic, but... you know, truly, how close do you think we are to, the dong? And, you know, in your opinion, you know, we've been hearing and hearing, and every date keeps on going. We pass it and everything. And so I just wanted your opinion, Jim's opinion, and about the dong, too. Any news or...
we've been hearing, and I'm sure everybody on this call has been hearing as well, that we're more likely to get calls, I mean, 800 numbers this weekend, probably no later than Monday. However, I think it's going to be a little later than that. Just from a call that I heard last night, I just didn't, it wasn't as optimistic as the call the previous night. So I just feel, you know, it might be later in the week, maybe Wednesday or Thursday. That's just me, though. That's just me.
Right. So you're really thinking that we're extremely close.
Oh, I'm, yeah, extremely close. Not as close as some people seem to think, but very, very close, yes. This month for sure.
This month for sure. Oh, praise God. Great. And,
okay.
And any news on the dong?
Same thing. They're all going to go together. Okay. They're all going to go together. Yep.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Well, thank you all for that wonderful Q&A section.
Outstanding,
it really adds so much to what we are trying to do. So anyway, most of us listen to, obviously, or hear many of the dark calls out there. And as I just said, many believe this RV is about to happen, so it is time to be prepared. Having a complete personalized contract trust at the time of the exchange proves that you have done your homework and plan to make a big difference with the windfall you're about to receive. You know, I've heard that such preparation can even garner a higher exchange rate. And, you know, we are aware that many currency holders may be currency rich but cash poor right now. So we have seriously reduced our prices for currency holders. Our trusts are just $14.95 for your initial motherlode trust. Secondary or family trusts are just $11.95. And these prices will go up moderately post-RV. They will go up considerably for new clients post-RV. And as I mentioned, many of you asked if Jim and I will be around post-RV. Well, you know, we're all ready to retire. We will be here to take care of your trust needs for about 6 months post-RV. But our staff will be on board considerably longer than that. You know, we all need a week or so to take care of our own exchanges, setting up new bank accounts, interviewing wealth managers, et cetera. So if you haven't begun your trust planning yet, I urge you to do so as soon as possible. Being prepared is far better than waiting to get prepared. So with that, I'm going to turn this call over to my partner, Jim Knox. Are you still blogging, Jim? Or are you there?
Well, I'm doing both. I'm having a couple issues here, but updated the website while we were speaking today. And, of course, every time you update something, you never know if it's going to work right.
That's right.
So it'll be finished here shortly as soon as I get off the call. But what I'm trying to do, and it'll be available, I guess, probably 30 minutes or so, I found an article about Basel III. It's titled A Revolution That Once Again No One Noticed. And
yeah,
it was written by a Russian, and he did an excellent job explaining all of this stuff, and I highly recommend everybody read it. It does finally tell us exactly who is controlling the money worldwide and what they're doing. And with Basel III went into effect March 29th of 2019, and gold is now money everywhere. So, and they're just changing the value of the gold. So the gold right now is between $1,200 and $1,300. They're saying by fall it'll go to $2,000, $2,100, something like that. And so there was a few comments about investments today on this call. And I am kind of like-minded. I don't want to put any money in the stock market. I don't trust the stock market. I don't want anybody to control my money. However, if we can exchange our new currency, whether it be the USN or the FRN or whatever we end up with, we won't know until we get there. If we can exchange that currency for gold, physical gold, which is real money, because the FRN and even the new United States note is nothing but currency. It's not money. So it may be backed by money, but it is currency. But if you own the gold, and if you buy it at $1,300, it goes to $2,000 by this fall. That's a nice little investment. And it wasn't really designed to be an investment. You were simply exchanging your fiat currency for gold. So that's one of the things I've been touting for a long, long time to a lot of people is, you know, buy gold, buy silver. But now that this article came out, it really explains exactly how the whole systems work. And I did not realize that a barrel of oil has always been based on a gram of gold. And now that they've released this, it was always 1 gram. It's one barrel of oil. Now they're saying with the new Basel III, it's going to be 1.6 grams of gold.
Wow.
So that means oil is going to go up dramatically, at least 50%. Cool. So, yeah. You know, here in Oregon where I live, temporarily, I'm not sticking around much longer, they just passed a couple new laws. And one was they raised the taxes on a gallon of gasoline for the state by 52 cents. I paid $3.29 for a gallon of gasoline last night.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So,
is that just for Oregon, Jim?
Yes, in Oregon right now, just Oregon.
Wow.
So where we're at with this is everybody has to start looking at the big picture, okay? The states are running out of money. They're raising taxes. We have a new gun law that's about to pass. And 13 of the 36 sheriffs say they will not enforce it. And as a matter of fact, it's so bad that if you have a can of pepper spray and are caught with it, that's a felony.
Oh my God.
So all these liberal states, and I do live in one of the most liberal states, is just getting completely out of control. So keep that in mind. So when we start talking about gold and silver, you're talking about money. You're not talking about an investment in metals. You're talking about money because that's now classified as being money. So the article is excellent. I suggest everybody get on the site here shortly and read it. It's not up yet. It will be up here shortly. So they figure out why it's not coming up, I'll fix that. It just takes me a couple minutes. And actually, the article's up. I can't get the image to come up, but I'll get that fixed, too. So it was an excellent article. And I think what we're going to start doing is, as Carol and I talked about this, I'm going to start blogging again. And a lot of stuff that we're hearing, I think it's time for me to put down on the blog so people can go to the blog and get current. I love the blog. I write. I don't know if you know, I write books. I publish books on Amazon. And so I write. I like to write. So in my spare moments, my cracks of time, I've always got a keyboard in front of me, and I'm always, you know, jotting things down in Scrivener, which is a program I use to write. So I think I'm going to start blogging again, and we can get a lot done in a short amount of time with me blogging and get that information up there. So as of this weekend, I hereby declare I are a blogger. Just go to this website, and the blog is open to the public. I'll set up to where it's open to the public. And there's only three places that will be open to the public. One is the disclaimer, one is the tools. Actually, it's three places now, four places. Let's see, let me go here, file, site. Yeah, we'll have the blog will be open to the public, the tools will be open to the public, disclaimers open to the public, and the resources will be open to the public. And a little plug for the resources. We have a bookkeeping service for high net worth individuals, and we have her ad on here. It's Arlette Bocamp. Help me out here, Carol. Bocamp?
I don't remember. Bocamp, I think. Yeah,
Bouchon. It's French. It's got to be.
Yeah.
And they're in New York, and their 800 numbers here, and how to get a hold of her. And so we're now working with you. If you have a business that will benefit the denarians, let us know. We'll feature you.
At no cost. No cost.
I'm sorry?
At no cost. We will not charge for advertising.
Oh, I was going to charge at least a cup of coffee.
There you go.
Maybe even a beer. You never know. You know. No, all jokes aside, yeah. We don't charge for promoting things like this. We don't charge. And the blogging is going to be fun, and I'll start pulling up. But I have a lot of articles. I do a lot of research. I'm on the Zero Hedge, RT, Axios, Drudge, you know, at least once a day, if not more often. And I always watch the Dow Jones, and I look at things. And I read a lot of articles, and so I think I'll just start putting those on there. And so let's see. I had a couple of things I want to talk about. Okay, after about 8 weeks of losing our good friend John Newell passed away in February. He was working on the server, and he had a small team, and they were doing this together, and everything came to a screeching halt. And so I've reassembled the team, got them back started. We started working on the server again. It's being updated and upgraded. My website's giving me a little bit of grief today because I didn't do what I was supposed to do, and that's go and change out the SSL certificate, which I'll do this afternoon. So if you get something that says it's not viewable, just click yes, it's good. It's a certificate. Yes, it's good. Just click it, and I'll get it fixed tomorrow. So we have a separate website coming online. Everybody will be notified of it, and it will be on our website. It'll be for the forms. All of our applications and our forms will be on a separate site. I'm not exactly sure which URL I'm going to use. I have two or three of them. But it'll be linked there, and you can go there and fill out all your forms. We'll use a brand new domain for that. And that's the two or three things that I want to talk about so far. Carol, any suggestions? What else we want to, wherever we want to go here?
I think it was, I don't know, doesn't matter who it was, questioning about, you know, I go to the banker or I go to trust management company and they want me to do, should I get my second trust from the trust management company? And I said, absolutely not. Would you like to explain why?
Well, if you got your second trust from another company, what kind of trust? Who's going to control it? Who knows about it? Stay with what we know works. We know this system works. This has been all the way to the Supreme Court. You know, the basis of this this website has been around since the 1800s. There's an unbelievable amount of case law that backs what we're doing. And you use these. Carol and I have looked at quite a few trusts. People send us, say, well, is this a good trust? No, it's not. We look at these things, and they're just a disaster. Stay with what you know. Stay with what you can trust. Stay with something that's got some longevity. Stay with something that's got some history. It's a pedigree. You're looking for a pedigree. We have the pedigree. And I don't care what some of these people say about, you know, these attorneys. I deal with attorneys a lot, and I don't like them. And they argue with me constantly, and I blow them out of the water by giving them a few court cases to prove that whatever they're saying is completely wrong. So stay with what we use. So if you're going to go to the bank, use our trust. If you're going to your second and third and fourth, just call us. We'll set one up for you. We'll get it done right away.
And also about other trusts, and other people brought this up to me. Other trusts tend to be very lengthy. If they're written by an attorney, it's going to be long. Okay, so you're going to get it. You're going to say, okay, and you're going to sign it, put it in the drawer, and forget about it. Our trust is only 9 pages, and it's 5 or 6 minutes. It's not a big deal. It's very easy to understand, and we give you, if you go to our website, we give you all the legal backup you need. We give you operating instructions. We give you hints on what to do. We give you suggestions on if you're going to do this, maybe this is what you want, or how you want to do it. You're not going to get that kind of service for free from any other trust producer. Would you agree, Jim?
I would agree. Absolutely agree. What we've done here is we've created a website with approximately 500 sample minutes. Category. We have manuals, we have books, we have over 1,000 pages of material by categories. There's nothing that I can't think of anything that you would need that we don't already have on the website. We clarify and add things constantly, but it's a massive amount of knowledge. And we've been building this website, this is the third one, by the way. We got hacked a couple times, but we've been adding stuff to this thing since 2001, 2002?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a massive site. But we keep reorganizing it because we realize, okay, this is hard to find, so we figure out, okay, how to make it easier. So, you know, we have it starts as a trust operation. It starts with get started. Then the next step, a trust for estate planning, basic trust operations, professional resources. When should you start? Why do I need a trust? That's just under trust operation. Then the list of documents we have, what is a contract business trust, certificate units, contracts and agreements, customer relations and credit, employment, other, and then we have the shields and the books. The list of minutes is just minutes and documents templates. Well, when you get there, it's a lot. And so some of these are not finished yet. I'm still working on them. But most of them you can just download either in a text format or in a Microsoft Word format. And then all you got to do is add your nomenclature. We sent you some paper. You see the template how they're done on the minutes in the book. Just make it your own, add it, date it, sign it, you're done. You can do it in just a matter of minutes. So we have all the stuff done. And then under the tools, which is always open to public, we talk about RoboForm and MailWasher Pro, to the great tools that we use every day. We also have in there all the mail drops for your trusts, information, and they have hyperlinks right to the companies. They have the prices in here. We have the letter that declares your trust domicile in case you need to change it. That's the 8822B that Carol talked about. We have how to order the paper used for your trust. You know, we use a special paper. We even show you where to buy it, how much it costs. You can get it at Amazon. Wow. Everything is in there. We have the actual form, the IRS form, is here. And I have the letter that I told people to use to send to your trust in here. So it's all, and that's all on the open page to the public. Then we have our disclaimer, and then, of course, we go back to the resources. And then we have the public content at the very top of the big thing. And it talks, it's a public overview. It talks about what the trust is. It talks about Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution is what we stand on. And then in there it has a contact us form, which I'm changing out tomorrow, so don't use it today. And that will be a new form. And then we'll have an area on here in the front of the website and on the footer of the website how to go fill out the new forms on the next website that's going to be attached to this website. So the reason we're using a second website is because we want a really short name. I think it's going to be probably just the number 3, the letter I, the word trust.com. That's probably what I'm going to use. 3i Trust, because it's Indicator Information Institute. That's where the 3 I's come from. You can remember 3i Trust, and you don't just, it's very hard to misspell 3i Trust. People kind of think of that.
Good one, Jim. That's a good one.
So, you know, we're just trying to make things simple and make things complete. We want to be here for you. And yes, we are going to retire, but we're not going anywhere after we retire. We'll be always available. You know, you may have to be a long-distance phone call, but we're always going to be available. And what we're going to do is we're going to get a complete staff in here, a complete team. I'm setting that up now with the new server. That's why we're going to this new server and all this stuff. There's going to be a team of people working with you for years. They're going to be here. They're going to be working for us. They're going to be our proxies. They're going to be the people you'll talk to instead of us, but if they need us, they'll call us, or they'll have you call us directly. But you're going to have a company backing you for years. We're going to make sure of that. We're not going to abandon you in any stretch of the imagination. We're here.
Yeah. So we've been here for a long time before anybody ever heard about Denars, and we'll be here for a long time afterwards.
That's right. I started this in 79, and Carol started in the early or mid-80s, and you know, then Jim was around. He started probably in the early 90s, I don't know for sure.
No, Jim was before me. Jim is the one that taught me about trust. So Jim and Bruce go back to the middle 80s, early 80s.
I thought you were saying the Middle Ages there for a second. Sorry, Jim. It was a bad joke. I know he's listening. So anyway, we're going to be here. We're here for the long haul. And I'm probably going to be relocating to Colorado. That's one of my goals. And in about 4 weeks, I have a good friend. His name is Joe Kohler. He's been around a long time. Hold on a second. Excuse me. And he's going to move here with me, and we're going to get everything set up to make the big move to Colorado. And he's going to be kind of my right-hand guy here to help me out quite a bit. So he's going to learn the business. He has trust, obviously, because he's my friend. And he is a Denarian, and he's excited about moving out to Oregon to start with and on up to Colorado. He's having some health issues, so he's going to move out here, and I'm going to take care of him. And, unfortunately, he fought cancer, and he won, but there's a lot of side effects. So I think that's all I can think of to say is we are continuing on, and every day we're working on this project. Anything else you want to add, Carol?
No, why don't you just add your contact information, because we're almost at 2.5 hours here. So just add your contact information, and we can let everybody go for the day.
And you're going to blame that all on me, aren't you? My name is Jim Knox. I'm in Salem, Oregon, so bear with me on the West Coast time. My phone number is 503-583-6791. And my email right now is security@indicatorinformation.com.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Judy, for your help with all
of you. You're welcome.
Yeah, and thank you, all of you, for your time and attention and for the great Q&A that we had this afternoon. Again, my name is Carol Worlius. My telephone number is 425-820-8090. My email is info@indicatorinformation.com. Have a happy and safe weekend, everybody, and go RV! Bye-bye.
Go RV! Bye-bye, everybody.